Hi there and welcome. This is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett on Power Radio. Thank you for listening. I appreciate your time. Glad to have you along today. I hope whatever's doing, whatever you are doing or whatever's happening for you is fabulous. I'm telling you, there is a whole lot of energy. I try to kind of take a break and just zone out before we get into the interview. This morning, I'm filling in for traffic and doing traffic reports and looking at these traffic reports as in automobile accidents, that kind of stuff for a local station. And it absolutely was going crazy. The last two or three days, I've had this incredible, intense energy. And one morning, I heard the word lightning and a male voice. And Andy, my husband, said, well, Chloe came in the room. Chloe's my cat. And she meowed. I said, but it didn't sound like lightning, did it? He said, no. It was a regular meow. Like, okay. But this energy is absolutely off the charts for amping you up and making and giving you this, in some ways, chaos, and another way, an incredible uplift and upgrade. So just whatever you're doing, take advantage of that and hone it in and say, I own this, and go from there. It's probably a really super good time to talk with Judith Truthstone. She's our guest today, and she is in charge of a global kindness revolution, a way of getting people engaged with this type of energy and using it, putting a positive spin into it. Judith Truthstone, my guest today. Hi, Judith. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm very happy to be with you today. And it's interesting you mentioned your cat. Among my other offerings, I have The Cat's Secret Guide to Living with Humans, and it talks about how my cat healed me when I had broken a rib while roller skating. So cats are very special beings, as you know, and they have a lot to teach us. So that was just a little side comment.
Oh, I love that. Okay, well, now that's like a tease, Judith. Don't stop there. You're a cat, so what was the connection? Because, yes, they are incredibly powerful.
Well, I had gone roller skating for the first time in 35 years with a couple of friends who coached me out of my retirement. And I was roller skating and letting go of my fear. And all of a sudden, I got knocked over by some energetic adolescents and apparently cracked a rib. And my friends wanted to take me to the hospital. And I said, no, they can't do anything. Just bring me home. So I'm lying in a tub of hot water trying to reduce the pain, and the cat, whose name was Io, one of the moons of Saturn, was sitting on the edge of the tub looking at me with disgust. And I said to the cat, I said, I know, there's just nothing like somebody growing old without grace, and that's me. And I apologized to the cat. I got into bed, still very uncomfortable, and the cat laid on my chest, as she did every night. And I just thought to myself, well, that's cozy, but you're not really on the spot. I just thought it. The cat got off of me, put her two paws on the rib that was fractured, and purred so loudly my whole body vibrated, and I felt like I was getting general anesthesia. And the cat then jumped off the bed and threw up on the floor. It's like she pulled the pain out of me and then released it. Mm-hmm. And I was getting ready to give her up for adoption because I was not a cat person at this point. I was a dog person, but the whole idea of kitty litters was like really abhorrent to me.
Oh, jeez.
To her, okay, cat, it's you and me. And so I became a cat lover. And she actually channeled this book. And it's kind of a spoof on the new age and how I became a cat lover and, you know, what to do about kitty litters and hairballs. And it's just a cute, very cute book. So
that's fabulous. I see. I think she probably did an end run and figured out how to get you in that position in the first place. So somewhere there's a little kitty angel at the roller rink going, okay. That
well, you
great.
Want to hear about more four-legged angels?
Absolutely.
Well, I'm starting out with the animals, but it all connects. I had a wonderful Samoyed that I had adopted and who developed, I call it Chem-Lon disease, from, you know, all the chemicals they put on the lawn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he got cirrhosis and he died, and I was pretty distraught. And afterward, I adopted from an ad in the paper gentle white shepherd named Molly. And Molly was with me for a long time. I loved her. She was just an incredible being. And she, too, got sick, the same thing. And her last night, she was sort of saying goodbye to me. I had been dragging her to animal acupuncturists and animal homeopathic doctors, and she just let me know no more. So the next with Cloud Bear, when he died, the vet said, I had him put down finally, and the vet said, did I want to be with him? I said, no, I didn't want to remember him as dead. So my friend Nancy, who went with me, and I waited in the waiting room, and at a certain point, there was a ball of sort of a pinkish gold light that appeared right in front of us, and we looked at it, and we looked at each other, and we looked back, and we knew it was Cloud Bear saying goodbye, and he did. With Molly, she got up in the morning, took a drink of water, peed, came back in, and died on my feet as I was calling the vet. And I was as distraught as I was when my mother died. I mean, it was just the bond between us was just so incredible. So I was just so distraught. After a few weeks, I consulted an animal psychic. And so she did a consult as to what had happened with Molly. And the psychic said, I've never seen anything like this before. She's like a giant white wolf sitting at the right hand of God. I was so startled, I didn't ask her, well, what did God look like? And I had been very ill at that point, and I didn't know what from. I'd been, you know, no, doctors didn't know. I had like 16 ailments. And Molly, I said at one point, ask Molly about my health. And from the spirit world, Molly said, the problem is in your lower left jaw. So I went to the dentist, and he said, oh, I don't see anything. I'll send you to a specialist, who said, well, I'll take it out, whatever it was. I finally got to a holistic dentist, told them the story, and she said, that's where we'll begin. And so Molly said, you know, the lower left jaw, I had 6 bridges. She took them off, and there was a drop of mercury that had leached out from an amalgam silver filling and was pressing on a nerve, which was causing these horrific headaches and all of that. So after 3 hours in the dental chair, I felt this light wash through me, and I got out of the chair like I'd had a massage. I felt wonderful. I was not able to go up and down steps except sideways, one at a time. I went home, and I could go up and down steps without any knee pain, and it was like the body burden had been lifted from me. So I began my own personal healing journey at that point in 1999. And, of course, mercury has a 40-year life, and so it's still lingering in my body, and I still have to maintain a healing diet and a healing lifestyle. So that also, that's what's happened with my friend. Someday I want to write a book about all of my wonderful connections with four-leggeds and the flying people and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm a real animal lover now. So,
well, you see, that's what's so fascinating is, and as you said before, it's all connected. It's all connected. And when we pay attention and give credit and also respect, then they are willing to help us. And as long as we shut them out and say and act like they're lesser than or they don't get it, then we lose.
Right. They're further ahead than we are.
Absolutely. I agree. Yeah. I've had my own animal companions give me some wonderful lessons on transitioning and on just being a lot more, conscious of things that are going on in my personal space because they're paying attention. And sometimes they look and say, are you listening? Do you see this? And it's like, darn it. You know, I don't, but I will be quiet and try and open up to be receptive in whatever way I can access it. But they're my barometers and they do it 24/7 without me asking them to. They just wait to see if I'm receptive.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's wonderful. And those people who haven't experienced that are missing so much if they would just listen anyway.
Well, that's okay. That's why we're talking about it, because this is an opportunity. Sometimes it's like if you don't know it, then, you know, there's no point in trying to make it happen. But if somebody has had it happen and you can kind of open a window in that way, then they're more receptive and more willing to say, well, okay, what if? And then it comes to them in their own way. But talking about it is the first way to get people to be aware and at least entertain the opportunity of connection if it's meant to be. Does
right.
that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And one of the things that Molly said from the spirit world is that she left because her job was to help new beings coming to Earth. I don't know if they were four-leggeds or two-leggeds. And that I had kept saying to her, you're going to come back as a human being. You're just too evolved to be just a cat or a dog. And And she didn't want to come back. She said it's you get stuck in one body for too long. She would rather have short-term lives and come back over and over again. So, oh, there's so much we don't know, isn't there?
Oh, I was looking at the butterflies. You're saying that the butterfly just came outside to land on their
side. Oh, that's one of my symbols.
Yeah. Well, and I work with that. That's my artwork. And it's just amazing. Part of that, though, with my animals, it's like there is no need to be stuck. And we aren't necessarily any better. Human, in some ways, is lesser evolved because of the lack of trust, where the animals who come in are completely, especially if they're a pet or some kind of a domesticated animal, they are completely and totally dependent upon humans to do something on their behalf. And, you know, wildlife, yeah, I guess we could say that because we're the ones who are out here running amok on the planet and they're kind of at our mercy. And so that's a higher evolved being willing to go into that trust state, that knowing that all is right with the world, no matter what the outward appearance is.
That's why I was given the name TrueStone. It's trust one, trust in the interconnection of everything. And that's the name I was given when I was initiated into the Bear Tribe Medicine Society in a blood ceremony back in the early 90s. So I made it legal, and every time I write my name, I'm affirming my trust in the oneness of everything. So,
was that with Sun Bear?
Yeah.
I read a lot of Sun Bear's work, and it's probably been at least 20 years or so when I was living in Sedona and in that area, and I had first gone through all this nightlight stuff that changed my world. But it sounded, I mean, for that kind of connection, there's so many wonderful belief systems, but Native American beliefs are just extraordinary in that they value all of the essence, everything, spirit,
right,
non-spirit, you know, the whole nine yards. How were you drawn to that?
Well, when I was a kid, my mother used to threaten me if I didn't behave, she was going to send me back to the Indians. And back in the early 90s, I received a flyer about a medicine wheel gathering. And I didn't know what that was, but I just knew I had to go. At the same time, almost on the same day, I read an article in the old East-West Journal about Vipassana meditation. And I felt the same thing. I've got to go to this. And so I began my journey on both paths at the same time. And I went to the medicine wheel gathering, and I felt like I was coming home. And I then, around that time, began a 14-year apprenticeship with Sun Bear until he passed in, I think it was 96. And I also was doing the Vipassana meditations. I did, I think, 16 10-day silent retreats, which I think is the first step for anybody who wants to walk a spiritual path, is to sit in silence with all your stuff for 10 days. And it's tremendously healing and clarifying. So
that was explain that, the Vipassana. How is it spelled?
Vipassana. It's the technique that the Buddha taught 2,500 years ago, and it was prophesied it would resurface in the West 2,500 years later, and lo and behold, it did. A wealthy Burmese industrialist suffered headaches worldwide and went to all the doctors, and nobody could help him. He finally stumbled on this ancient technique that was still being taught in a few places, and he did a 10-day course, and his headaches disappeared. So he vowed to bring that to the world. And so when he came to America for one of his first courses was just around the time that I was looking into it. And so I was fortunate enough to be able to spend my first 10-day retreat with Goenkaji, which was his name, and that was life-changing, too. So I had both the Indian paths and the Native American Indian paths that I was doing at the same time. I should say I'm a double Gemini, so there are four of us here, so that's how I managed to do all that. But it has... And that's kind of how that all happened. But actually, my awakening began... I was raised Catholic, and I was the May Queen in eighth grade and all of that. And this was, I'm 76 now, so this was back in the day when sex was shameful and all that. I ended up getting pregnant and having to get married. We called them shotgun weddings back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was doing homework for my husband, who was in college, and I did a lot of his homework for him because I, of course, had to drop out of high school. I did go to school later on and get my degrees and all that, but at that point I had really nothing going. So one of his homework assignments was reading Thomas Paine's The Age of Reason. And I'm 17, and I read this book, and that was it for me in organized religion. I just stopped believing in it. Although it was very hard to extricate myself because I was in a pretty much a Catholic lifestyle milieu with my family. And, of course, talked. Not only did I get pregnant without being married, but then I left the church. So I was really on quite a different path from most of my family and friends. But it just, it's been several times in my life when I've read things that have really awakened me to follow through. Another time I read an article also back in the 90s about a man here in a prison in Pennsylvania who was looking for clemency. Pennsylvania is one of the few places in the country where life without parole means you're never going to be even considered for parole. So it means forever. And I wrote a letter of support I knew nothing about prisons. I wrote a letter of support. I was just so touched by this article, and the prisoner invited me to come to the prison to do a workshop. And I'm a writer. I'd never been to a prison. I thought I'll get some good background and all that. Well, I went in, and they hired me eventually to teach creative writing, and I started working with them to get their stories out, because at that time, 4 of the 15 students came to me and said, I'm innocent. And I had, though I knew about racism and all that and had been active in civil rights, I had Martin Luther King to dinner to my house. And I said, all right, show me. And they brought in their cases. I took them to supportive lawyers who looked them over. And they said, were it not for prosecutorial misconduct, inadequate representation, or time-barred testimonies, none of these people would still be in prison. And that really cracked me open, and I thought, this is incredible. It turns out in Pennsylvania alone, there are 5,000 lifers, which older prisoners cost about $100,000 a year to taxpayers. So we spend here in Pennsylvania $500 million a year to keep people behind bars who've been there 25, 35, 40, 50 years. If they were in adjacent states, they would have been considered for parole. That doesn't mean they'd automatically get out, or the most, the serial killers would be released. But let's face it, a lot of innocent people are in prison, and that's what really cracked me open. So I worked on the first book that we did, which is Selling America's Soul, CELLING, Torture and Transformation in Our Prisons and Why We Should Care. And it's been called by prisoners the best book in print that describes prison from most every perspective. And when the administration found out I was working on this book, they started to harass me, and they wanted to do a full-body search. I said, no, that's rape. I'm not having it. I quit. So I finished the book through writing, through phone calls and things, and the book finally came out, and it was banned by the prisons. It's banned in Pennsylvania, and I was banned as dangerous. Which, of course, is words that are true are dangerous. So I was
What happens is you're forcing people to think about a very uncomfortable subject, and that's dangerous.
Right, exactly. I was not banned at the local jail in Philadelphia. So I was in there teaching creative writing. And this was right after the Virginia massacre. And I brought a couple of packs of thank you notes that I found in my desk drawer, which I had full intention of writing and hadn't. So I said, look, for your homework assignment, I'd like you to observe your fellow prisoners and staff. And when you see someone doing a kindness act, just write on here, thank you for your kindness, and give it to them. And I didn't know if they would do it or laugh at it or whatever. The women's group I had did it. The men's group didn't do it. The following week, I went to the prison, and the guards in the schoolhouse at that point were all females. And they ran up to me, and they were hugging me and saying, oh, what have you done? And it was so wonderful. There was like a nanosecond of kindness that penetrated this horrible place of darkness. And I was just amazed. I had no idea. So I was then mentioning it to a bunch of lifers that I was still consulting with, and they said, that's what we need. We need kindness. So they worked with me to create the kindness cards as an antidote to violence and meanness and all of that. And they raised the money for the first publishing of the first printing of the cards. I think we did 1,000. We now have given out 100,000 in this country. We have a Spanish version in three South American countries through restorative justice programs. And we're working on a Farsi version for Afghanistan and Iran. And we now have people doing kindness circles with the hurricane or the earthquake refugees in Nepal. Wow. And I've got a relative of the president of Egypt wanting to represent the kindness revolution in Egypt. And so there are people waiting all around the world for this incredible thing that is occurring. So I've also been doing healing circles for about 45 years. I started with the women's movement originally, helped get that started here in Delaware County where I live. And out of that began to do the circle work. So what I discovered in doing the community kindness circles, which we do them, we have tried to do them at lockdown time. So people on the inside are in a receptive state, and then we sit in a circle and draw on the energy from above and the earth light from below and swirl it around. And then we send it into prisoners, to the mental hospitals, people at war, and the 60 million refugees. Like on International Women's Day, I did a circle for a group of women entrepreneurs who knew nothing about prisons or anything, but I'd also alerted the women at the Women's State Prison that we would be doing a kindness circle at 4 o'clock on that Saturday. And so we did, and we sent the light of kindness into the women's prison, and they all felt it. It was the most incredible thing. And even in the kindness circle on the outside, it was only like 20 minutes, and one woman said, I could feel myself levitating. My chair was levitating, and they all felt it and got it, and suddenly they were concerned for the first time about women in prison. So this has started out for me to help people see people in prison as people in prison. And there are an estimated 50,000 people a year that go to prison, innocent people. And God knows what that all costs us. So out of the kindness circles, I decided to do a documentary, How to Create a Kindness Circle. And that is on YouTube, so all of your listeners can check it out, because the goal is, now that we know about string theory in physics, we know that there are 11 simultaneous dimensions of any reality, and so this is the first time, because we now have the internet and smartphones and all that stuff, that we can all synchronize. So at the same time, if we all focus on kindness, all of us at the same time, like we have good groups, Catholic Social Services, Jewish Family Services, the Red Cross, all of the rights groups, and all of these people are so desperately trying to make the world a better place. But it's not working because the energies are not together. If we can convince people, and I'm writing a letter to the Pope who's coming to Philly next month, and to the Dalai Lama, whose people want to work with us, to call for a daily national call for kindness at noon. In Arab countries, they have a call to prayer every single day, five times a day. So we're going to work through the UN to create this resolution so that if we can get 51% of the people to tune in at noon the same day, every day, think kind thoughts, take kind actions, or whatever that you can do at that point in time to align the energy so that by pulling the energies together, we magnify it. And all we need to do is get 51% of the world's population, which is, I think, about 7.5 billion. And considering that, I don't know how many hundred million people tuned in about Kim Kardashian's ass, I think it would be a piece of cake if we can use the social media, which has never been used in this way before. It's been used to separate us, but never to unite us.
Right, right. And it's, I see that in the media every day, the fear mongering and the just the constant complaining and bemoaning about how awful everything is. Okay, I'm telling you what, we're going to have to get a break in here real quick, but I want to come back and talk with you about the rest of your experiences, because you do have a fabulous background. And on your bio, 12 grandkids. At least at
and
the
I'm
moment.
Going to be a great grandmother, I just learned.
Okay, see, there you go. There's a whole lot more to you, but the kindness thing is fabulous, and it doesn't involve a religious background. So let's come back with more. We're going to take a quick break and find out more about the things that brought you to this point. It sounds like you are absolutely charged and on fire with this
absolutely.
Wonderful passion. All right, so back with more Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. This is Empower Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back with more with Judith Truestone.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
Oh, this coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment, and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home. But these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
This is Conscious Living. Hi there, I'm Wendy. Empower Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Glad to have you along. And we're talking about kindness. Judith Truestone has an incredible background. What, 76, I believe, is what you said. You're 76, and so many years of being focused on shifting and changing and basically being a rebel, because if you start out with that complete Catholicism as your background, your frame of reference, it's hard to get out of that programming to get into all the things that you are now doing. That's a phenomenal thing in itself, but it also says you have an extreme will, a sense of doing and of I will do, I will achieve, I am. There's some kind of empowering gene that you have.
Well,
that people
interestingly,
might
I have
like
had,
to get.
7 or 8 near-death experiences. I've been in the tunnel and everything. And I was told I got to come back because my work wasn't done. So I know I have a lot of spirit help behind me. And I confirm that on a regular basis. They just haven't been able to fix my computer so it doesn't be so aggravating, but I don't know. As I said in the beginning, I have techno demons. So the biggest stress in my life is getting the computer to work so I can get this book done that I'm working on. But you wanted to know more about the kindness circles.
Wait. Okay, we'll go back to the kindness circles in a minute. Okay. But what I want to touch on, because you have addressed something that a lot of people who have this incredible kinetic energy, especially if they're going through something like there's when you go through a Kundalini awakening or you go through some kind of transcendent experience, sometimes the electrical energy of your body does all sorts of funky things with your wiring. Okay,
I've been struck by lightning twice.
Okay, yeah. Oh, gosh. See, that's the thing about the lightning. Lightning, I'm like, and I've written this down the last two or three days in my journal, and I'm asking, what is it about lightning? There's another guy I'm going to be talking to who was struck by lightning. Same thing, Tony Sicoria. And he 12 years, he had this incredible urge to play the piano. Didn't know how. 12 years to become an accomplished master pianist. And it changed his whole life. But these kinds of experiences sometimes create issues for us with mechanics. My stuff, it's not a problem. It's the nightlight is a constant companion. And so I have this wonderful interaction and engagement with the energy that creates my nightlights, the blinking, and just lets me know that I have a mission and I need to keep doing it. But that kind of stuff sometimes there's no answer and there's no book that says how it's supposed to work. It just does. So when you're talking about these things and saying, well, I just got to get through it, it isn't unusual. This is one of those little symptoms of there are other things going on, and you don't have to sweat it. You don't have to fix it. You have to figure out how to calm down and let it work for you. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And on some level, I know that. But it's really an impediment to my work because I spend so much time trying to get the damn thing to work. And I have a son who's an IT guy. And everybody who comes in contact with me around my computer issues say, I've never seen anything like this before.
No.
I don't know what to do.
It's your energy. And I'll tell you what, there's a guy, Ed Edwards. And he does what they told him when he first blew out his first computer, and I've blown out a couple, was because you also got this other energies, these other energies, beings, entities around you who also have this electrical dynamic. But they said you just completely fractured this stuff when these little whatever it is went and wreaked havoc and blew up the computer. And so when this energy is around you, it doesn't cooperate. It doesn't play fair. It just is a matter of saying, okay, for me, I have to retire about every 18 months, every 2 years, 18 months, or limit my time on each one so I don't mess them all up. And I've figured out a way to do that. But I know it's frustrating. At the same time, I also know that I just wanted you to talk about that because other people are experiencing these incredible electronic anomalies and saying, oh, it's the equipment, it's the machine. And it's actually...
No, I think it's negative energy. I mean, I'm convinced of that because what I'm doing is so profound. It's beyond me. I just work here, really. But the only sense I can make of it is that there are negative energies that don't want me to get this work done, that don't want me to get this book out, which the whole world is waiting for at this point. And it's just, I mean, I smudge and I have crystals and I meditate and I speak to it. I thank it when it works. And I don't know. I think I need a techno exorcism, if there is such a thing.
Do you talk to the ETs?
I haven't, no. I haven't.
Okay.
Okay,
that's another element that's also part of it, that paranormal angle, that aspect of it. There's this, and the best word we have right now is extraterrestrial or, you know, transdimensional. That's also part of it. And when that connects to, or when you connect to that also blows out your electronics and causes issues. What are your pets telling you?
Keep going. I mean, I'm not getting any do this or do that, just hang in there kind of and be determined, which I am. But it's wearing me out because it's taking too much of my precious time. I should also tell you, one of my near-death experiences was 4 years ago when somebody ran a red light, a distracted driver, probably texting, and almost destroyed me. I had multiple spinal pelvic rib fractures, and they said I'd never walk again, and I am walking again, not real steadily, but I am walking, and I can dance, and, you know, I'm better than ever, so I've never listened to doctors. That's the second time I've told I would never walk again. And I've been, you know, looking into alternative treatments ever since. And so it's been a challenge just staying alive. And so far I'm staying alive. That's all I can tell you.
Did they tell you what your work was?
Oh, just keep on what I'm doing, and that the Kindness Project is what the spirit world wants to see happen. And they're giving me guidance. I mean, I'm up in the middle of the night writing stuff, and the whole concept really became clear to me during the past year when I saw that I am receiving information on another dimension. And rather than being afraid of it, I'm writing it all down. And here's the beauty of it that I love in the work. It requires nothing of people except wanting kindness and being committed to a kindness lifestyle. And it's basically a lesson in mindfulness. I mean, that's kind of the big word nowadays. But what I say to people is, you can hate your neighbor, but if you'll have the courage to sit in a kindness circle with them, you can still hate them, but you might not hate them as much. There's something about sitting in the circle, connecting hands. As I say, you can't connect with the energy until you connect hands with each other and amplify the energy, which is bigger than the group, and let it heal you and then direct your healing out. And I'm calling the prisoners who are signing up to work with me, call themselves Warriors of Light, and we're working on developing kindness behind bars, eventually to have like a manual that can go to all the prisons, a prisoner's guide to kindness behind bars. I mean, if there's anything that's needed, it's something like that. So I feel passionately about getting this work out. We're trying to connect with the Pope in September, the Dalai Lama in October, and we're calling now. I haven't set the date exactly, probably sometime in May of 2016, where we want to have a global kindness circle where everybody who's involved and thinks about it or hears about it will be focused on the same day at the same time, the same hour. And if we can align all those energies at one time, I think the energy for kindness will be so much more powerful than the energy for violence and racism and meanness. And I'm working with some high school kids to show them how to work with energy circles in their schools and to diminish, you know, bullying and all that. And I'm doing kindness circles at retirement homes or, you know, assisted living facilities. And one of our people is actually involved right now in Afghanistan with the peace negotiations with the Taliban. And I said to him, oh, you're going to be doing kindness circles with the Taliban? And he said, anything is possible. But wouldn't that be a hoot?
That's amazing. That's amazing.
And,
okay.
You know,
The deal is, and if you're listening to this about the kindness, there's actually science behind this that says that when we do something good, getting, you know, whether we're on the receiving or giving in, there is a buzz that you get from this kindness, this altruism, this thing, people being generous with each other and to each other and for each other. And so the science behind it says that it's almost like that runner's high. You get that altruism, that kindness high. And so there's actually a reason that this makes sense. This is a beneficial thing, and it's in our best interest when we do practice being kind and allowing ourselves to be generous rather than judgmental and automatically jumping to the gun and saying, well, this is bad because. It's like, well, what if I helped?
Mm-hmm.
That being in Afghanistan, that's a courageous act for
Absolutely.
Anyone because you're going into the middle of it's in the middle of a huge pyrotechnic display, you know?
Right.
So,
I just hope he can stay alive over there. But, you know, What happens when you do an act of kindness, and this is part of the science behind it, is your serotonin and oxytocin levels rise. These are the happy hormones. It's like when you smile, whether you feel it or not, your brain knows you're smiling, and so it's, oh, happiness, and it will release these hormones. So your happy hormones are elevated. The person receiving the kindness, their happy hormones are elevated. Those who observe it, read about it, or just hear about it, like the people listening now, all are having uprises in their serotonin and oxytocin levels. They're all feeling a little bit better just from listening about kindness. And so the other thing is, so many movements, if you will, require you to follow a certain dogmatic, this is the truth kind of thing. And I'm saying, keep all your identities, keep all your separate, if you will, your separatist thing, but for just for 5, 10, 15 minutes, let it go and see yourself as connected with all. I believe in the Jesuit philosopher Gerard de Chardin, whose theory was there's a web of life surrounding the earth, and that each of us dangles by a slender thread of light from this web of life. So what happens on any part of that web affects all of us, which is why some days we feel, we don't know why we're feeling rotten, but then we read in the paper about the earthquake in Nepal or, you know, similar atrocities. All of these things affect us because we are all one.
Well, we feel the emotional buzz, whatever that buzz is, whether it's positive, negative. I remember going down to Hurricane Katrina and going to Hattiesburg to help with the animals there. On the way down, there was this incredible rush, this buzz thing that went through me like a wave, a rolling wave. And it felt, you know, like when a car would go by and a cloud of dust comes over you, I could feel that. And there was this thing of sorrow and of grief. I thought, oh, whoa, I had no idea. It was incredibly intense. But it wasn't just from the people. It was from the whole, from the environment, from the animals,
yeah,
from that scar that had just been created with this wound, and then going in there to help heal or help at least do some little thing to assist was my only way of reacting. But it's those things that you become aware of when you experience these incredible crises, and you have no idea until that moment of connection that this is real, that it has a feeling to it, a sensation to it, and a color, and a, you know, something, mm-hmm, that affects your bioelectric energy. And that was one of those things. Mm-hmm. When I left for that, the house with the night lights, there was a song playing on the radio, and my lamp started interacting. It says, and the song is "Don't You Forget About Me," and my lamp started going on and off in sync with the music. Don't you forget about me?
Wonderful.
So it's that thing of, you know, we are never alone, but we do have to connect and allow and engage that other element to assist us, and just trust that right place, right time. That the things we are doing are helping, no matter what it looks like on the external plane. The other thing, recently I was doing a practice. I said, go out, go do this, and just stand outside the sun, basically. And, well, what am I supposed to see something? They said, no, that's a demonstration of practice. You practice, and you're not always going to see results. That's the point of practicing. It's practicing, uh-huh, listening and practicing responding. Okay, I listened, I responded, I didn't see anything, but I got the point.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, when I first went to the prison, which is the fifth largest maximum security prison in the country, it's called the Marine Corps of Prisons, you could actually feel the pain undulating out from the prison walls themselves. As I drove up the hill to the prison, it was like actual pangs of sadness. It was horrible. But the reason I knew it was the right thing to do is when I came out after a couple of hours behind bars with everybody, I would come out feeling light and clear. Like, you know, sometimes you're someplace and you pick up some dark energies affecting,
yes,
you. Or,
yes.
Yeah. This was pure light coming through me. And I knew it was the right thing to do, even though my family, my friends thought I was crazy. Why are you wasting your time with those monsters? And, you know, things like that. And I actually lost friends who said, I don't want to hear about prisons. And I think that our country, because of the way we do prisons, which is horrible, diminishes us all spiritually. That by not looking at how we're treating human beings worse than animals, you know, I wish the PETA people would get involved with prisons, you know, because conditions are far worse than for any of the things that happen to animals.
I remember back in 77 or 70s, 80 something, we were doing a debate, and it was for the penal reform at the time, and saying we knew this was coming. The statistics were there that they were going to be overcrowded, overwhelmed, and no response and no plan B. And that's where we are right now.
Yes, except I think people are finally starting to wake up. I've done two documentaries besides How to Create a Kindness Circle. One is about, what's it called, Healing Justice, A Journey into Shadow America, and the other is Soothing and Nurturing Human Spirits, which was a workshop I did where I taught hands-on healing techniques to family members so they could go into the visiting rooms and do hands-on healing on their loved ones in prisons.
And have you done anything about the privatization? Because that's a game changer there.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah, that's a huge game changer.
Oh, the money they are making on profit, it's disgusting. Corporations, one of the private industries, they have their own private jet. So you can imagine these people taking over prisons and making so much money. It isn't by giving the prisoners more programs or better food or better medical care. I have one of my star writers. Oh, by the way, the prisoners and I started something called Sage Writers, and we published about 30 books of literary and social merit about transformation behind bars. And out of that, we decided we wouldn't do urban novels because they only feed the problem. But it was the writing. I remember one guy said, you know, when I came to prison, I could only write my name. And now I'm in a book. I mean, the pride they all felt over just being associated with it is just beyond belief. And when I taught the creative writing where I gave the homework assignment, I would take their writing in class. And I'd go home and put it on the computer, and the last day of the class, I had put all their work together in a spiral notebook, and I called it Reentry Healing Through Kindness Circles or something like that. And when they came in and saw on each seat, there was a spiral-bound book with their writing in it, it was like they had been sent to heaven. It was like the first positive thing some of them experienced in their entire lives, and some of them just cried, and I cried with them. I've had the most incredible spiritual experiences with people behind bars. But on the outside, too, there's a colleague doing kindness circles in Western Pennsylvania, and she says when she does them, people see the light. We draw the light from above and the earth light from below. We swirl it together in our hearts, and then we send it around the circle of the group, and then we send it out. But at a certain point, we invite in the ancestors, and one kindness circle, a young man who was having a lot of trouble in life, his grandparents appeared from spirit and said, you're on the wrong path, you need to change what you're doing. And he did. And so things like that are happening all the time. A woman was giving out kindness cards at a bus stop in a very, very poor city. This woman got off the bus, and my colleague handed her a kindness card, and she said, she burst into tears, and she said, I've been riding the bus praying to God, please give me a sign that I should go on living. And she gets off the bus, and here this woman hands her a kindness card, and it's like her spirit immediately felt healed and strengthened and encouraged to go on. So things like this happen so often. And really, when you think about it, who can be opposed to kindness except munitions manufacturers and bomb makers and gun makers? Other than that, there's a yearning for kindness in all of us. Even the worst of us still yearns for that connection. And
that's universal. That's universal.
Yes.
I mean, one of the things they've studied in terms of our biology and that one of the physical needs is acceptance, is to be part of a community. And that is in us from the get-go. So when you get ostracized or labeled as an outcast, that's a shunning and that's intentional. That's meant to in any way, shape, or form, deflate you as a being who has self-worth. And it's so incredibly effective. But you demonstrate that thing of coming from a background where you had to, as a kid, start saying, okay, nope, not going to go that direction. I've done the same thing. It's that thing of, it doesn't matter if you're popular. What really matters is, have you got it going for yourself? Are you doing something helpful? Are you giving something back? Are you leaving something of value rather than taking everything of worth and saying, okay, I got it? Because when you do that, there's nothing. There is no benefit. There's no reciprocity. And that's what a lot of this is about. It's like seeing what is here and making the best of it and then giving something to lift it up and say, had a great time. You're going to have an even better time. I got to go see you. Have a ball. Okay. That's what your pets are doing. They're saying it was fun, but I don't need to come back.
Well, I already have a list for when I come back next lifetime, hang gliding. I want to do the Amazon and all those things that I didn't quite get to this time. But I hope I have a few more years to see this come to a fruition. I would love for that to be my legacy. But, I have no special powers or anything. I just have, for some reason, been chosen to do this work. And I'm doing it the best I can and trying to align myself with, similar-minded people. And, there's a lot of people that think I'm nuts. And you know what? I don't care. I really don't care.
You've managed to do a whole lot with those kinds of attitudes because, it doesn't matter. That's their deal. It isn't yours. Yours is your goal and your project right in front of you. And any attention you give to all the detractors, it's just like Martin Luther King. When you said, I had dinner with Martin Luther King, my producer goes, OMG, kind of, that MLK. Uh-huh. It's like, what, there it is right there in that almost, continuity of a style, a life path, and crossing those paths. And then here you are, how many ever years later, saying kindness, peace, go forward, pay it forward with a kind act, not with violence and not with animosity and hatred. The only thing that melts the world is a soft heart, a giving heart, not a bleeding heart, but a giving heart and an empowered heart. Uh-huh. And that's what changes humanity. And us as a species, as we evolve into kinder, gentler, incredibly intelligent beings.
Absolutely. And the book that I'm working on, which is called The Global Kindness Revolution, How Together We Can Heal Violence, Racism, and Meanness. And I'm devoting the book to those people who are most marginalized and dehumanized, which are refugees, 30 million of them children, people in prison and their families, the disabled and the elderly, and those, who are just discounted. But I'm mentioning everybody, including, for instance, mother-in-laws. We always encourage mother-in-laws, and it's the same as prison rape jokes. When are we going to stop this? We never hear any father-in-law jokes, do we? And I think it's just part of the whole misogynist culture that we live in.
It's a trend and it's a habit and it's ingrained. And so it's safe. It's safe because we're familiar with it. It's already been accepted as viable and okay content. When you deviate from that, then you become, as you have been labeled, dangerous because you're not going along with the status quo. You're talking about things that shouldn't be talked about because they've been taboo. And females have that has been an easy scapegoat. The female, she's the weaker species. Well, and I don't know, a weaker link. If we buy into that, then it's true. But if we just say, okay, get over it. All right. Yeah. You're joking, but I'm in charge.
Well, good luck. Actually, in the book, I have a whole chapter on race. And here's my theory about why blacks and whites in particular cannot get it together and heal this thing. I think we now know that the environment can shape our DNA. And I think that it's in white people's DNA, slavery, their memory of slavery is still there. We white people know what our ancestors did, whether we supported it or not. And so At a core DNA level, we're afraid of black people's retaliation for slavery because, by golly, we know that they're still pissed about it because it's still going on with the new Jim Crow, Michelle Alexander's approach, and, you know, all of the things that we've done since slavery supposedly
stopped. Don't get started on Native American because they've got a bigger axe to grind.
Absolutely. I mean, they're practically out, you know, been genocided out of existence.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of hurt. There's a lot of karma. There's a lot of, we
right.
could go into
and
all the negative,
people.
But instead by focusing on gratitude and
exactly.
kindness, it
mm-hmm.
takes it
and black
out of
people
the
know,
picture.
I mean, they remember slavery and they remember who did it. And of course, they're afraid of white people's more slavery, which they have maintained through social policies. And so we'll never get together unless we can sit in a kindness circle and hold hands. As I say, we can't plug into the energy until we plug into each other.
Judith, we got to go. TrustOneKindness.com. Is that the best way to connect with you? Because we got 30 seconds.
Yes, it is. Uh-huh.
All right. So on that happy note, will you send us some good vibes?
I would love to. And my helper, Nikki, is with me, and she listens to you regularly. She's the one who turned me on to you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, we are so lucky right now to be in a time when we understand as humans, our thoughts are incredibly powerful. Thoughts are things. You want to make magic, you start thinking in that direction, and you'll see it manifest. Kindness. It's one act, one thought at a time. Going forward, uplift, engage. See ya. Thanks for listening.